Yeah, so in your about page, you say, we are focusing on works in science fiction and fantasy with themes and values that do not come in conflict with our Christian worldview. And so you're writing from a negative perspective there, and from people that read confessions and statements of faith, and we can nuance that up and down. But so what does the Christian worldview have to do with things that we read and write? Why can't I just sit down with a book and just open it and go on? And if it's bad, I can go, oh, I didn't like this, or ooh, there's some icky words in here, and I can just brush past them and be fine with them. So what about our Christian worldview should inform both the things that we read and write?
Well, that's tough. I think that where we're coming at it from Periapsis Press, at least, is that we want to, we don't have to be preaching as authors in our books to be making a difference. But at the same time, we want to be presenting stories and ideas that make people reflect a bit, turn towards God's story. We want to be a good witness in that sense. As far as reading and consuming media, I think it's important that we are putting truth into our minds, even if it's not like the Bible, right? We want to be putting the Bible into our minds, obviously. But with our entertainment, we want to be consuming a narrative that is going to influence us positively. So not just with values, but with how we understand the world to work, particularly things like themes like redemption and forgiveness and things that would help us to have a Christ perspective in that sense, even if it's got a few icky words.
Yeah. Scott Christensen's book that we're reading, and I'm sure he's pulling from other places too, but he does a really good job. He talks about stories that are the tragedies and comedies. So, a good story is boiled down to the tragedies, meaning at the end of Hamlet, everyone dies, and the theme that's supposed to be taken away is this is what vengeance causes: death in the soul, death in the physical characters, death in the family, death in the fabric of society. And so, we see the need for justice and judgment to come in there. Or comedy is the redemption story arc, and what better example can I point to than the death and resurrection of Christ? It comes down as a tragedy. People are hiding away. The knocks at the door, and they're scared. Only the women are brave enough to venture out, and then they come back and bring forth the good news of the comedy of why are you hiding? Why are you here in this locked room? Go. And go see that death is overcome. That's the biggest comedy right there. Is everything a tiny village of Bethlehem, a servant leader, someone not of the priestly line, not of society, and Rome is still standing at the end. Like that's the almost the comedy of errors of our thinking process. And so. I always think back to Richard Dawkins always has like this critique of the story of Lot, where he goes in and you have the strangers come in, and the village shows up, and they want to do all the nefarious things to his visitors, and he throws out, well, take my daughters, and he says, well, that's just evil, that's wrong. Yeah, that's the point of the story, is Lot is in the mix with these people of Sodom and Gomorrah, and we have to realize that he's at the precipice of the gate. He's welcoming people. He's probably a leader. And it's not really until like the New Testament that we find out that Lot is saved, and we're waiting until Hebrews 11 to where we can to figure out the God eye perspective of Lot's ending. And so it's seeing things like offering up daughters to be sacrificed to the crowd. That's a bad thing. Or, you know, Jesus telling stories of wrong judges that are just so annoyed by somebody that they give justice. And so, you know, he compares even God to this bad judge to make this story point. And so he's telling the in stories. And so that's what we can see being made in the image of God. And we see from a Christian perspective, as you were saying, that a lot of these stories, when they reflect reality, even though we're talking about going up in space and aliens and giant monsters with squishy parts, or sci-fi with plasma cannons, we're still in order for us to read that, we have to have a touchstone, and that's usually reality. You know? So, like Harry Potter. For all the evil magic that's in there, we understand like the kid in the closet who's ostracized. Well, I think it touched a lot of people because there's a lot of people that read books like Harry Potter who are ostracized underneath the stairs. And you know, I spent most of my time reading Ender's Game for my college introduction. And I'm like, I'm really in a good book right now. So as long as I'm not signing up for classes. I'm going along with Ender, and I'm trying to defeat the aliens, and then I realize I might be the monster. Like that's an amazing point that I can touch back on and say, okay, from a Christian perspective, as I'm going to filter everything through, because that's my basis for reality, my basis for knowledge, my basis for concepts of justice or goodness. I can have a point reference where that story has both a tragedy and maybe a comedy aspect, or only a tragedy. And so that's what I like about sci-fi, is that it presents new settings where we can talk about it. And I always go back to Star Trek episodes where it's like, yeah, they're set in space and there's silly creatures with plastic, and you know, you've got really bad fight scenes, but does war have to take place where destruction and violence happens, and then there's a lottery system that comes in, and you're having society be the protected, but then the people are just in the way, and so you're protecting society. And at the end, spoilers, is that Kirk launches missiles and destruction happens, and he says, no, war has to be violent because humanity has to hate war. It can't be blasé about death and killing. It can't be this lottery system where they bring stuff in. I really like those stories that really kind of challenge the ideas of like, oh, well, is Kirk the bad guy in that? Because, I mean, he just launched a bunch of missiles at works of art that have been preserved for thousands of years, and he comes in and it was the Prime Directive violated and stuff like that. So, one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you on and talk about this stuff is because I'm getting new information on just how to read things and not just consume things. So it's really I have a lot to say that I'm at this point rambling, and I'm sure this is like three audience members that are going to watch it.
I agree that sci-fi and fantasy they make a good vehicle for exploring themes in a deeper way, maybe because you get caught up in the descriptions and the cool factor of what all these characters are doing. But then because you're not bound by actual history or actual reality, there aren't things that intrude. For example, I know that there have been comments on books that were set in 2020 before all of the pandemic stuff hit. And people just get completely taken out of the story because they're like, this didn't happen.
Yeah.
And, but with sci-fi and fantasy, you're able to set things up the way that you as an author want them. And as a reader, you're able to explore through exploring a new world, different ideas that you might not come across in your everyday life.
Yeah. One of my favorite books, if you were to ask me, like, one of my top three books is H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds. There's not a lot. So, you know, Martians come down and destroy the world type deal. What I like is the cast of characters that you meet. You don't really meet a whole lot, but who you do is like, he's a reporter. Then you meet the partisan. So I might be pulling from the musical version because I like all things War of the Worlds. So Brother Nathaniel. So you have a priest there. Then you have the artilleryman who comes in and, you know, he has grand ideas, but not the fortitude to carry them out type deal. And then you have a love interest. And then, you know, throughout the Martians are there and they seem just a force of nature. And so the ideas of thinking about society and the big things like the military or society or how people would react to that and what good can come from that. And of course we're reading it from Wells's perspective, who probably isn't the top-notch Christian that, that I want him to be, especially, what he did later in life. But, you know, is the religious sect, are they helpful in this situation? And then, you know, what's the big takeaway is through our military might, our society, our structures, our organization, it's all taken away from us. And what defeats the ultimate bad guy is the thing that you can't see. It's the thing that they came for and it killed them. And so it's the blankness at the end. It's not, you know, and on this day we shall declare our Independence Day. There's no speech like that, although I love that speech, but there's just death and disease and destruction, and then society pops out and goes, okay, what now? And so I really like, even from a not Christian story, that group of characters, that message is something that that is really interesting to think about. Once you, what, you know, you do your one read and you're like, oh, cool, Martians, destruction, 1800s, this is really neat. And what does this say about war to us? And that's your kind of second read through. And those stories that stay with you and you read over again and you realize, oh, there's more than I can get out of this other than pew pew and aliens, which is fun. You know.
Yeah. That's why we read sci-fi and fantasy, is because it's fun.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that's the other thing that we're trying to promote with Periapsis Press, is that we can have these values and themes and worldviews without it being boring or awkward, like general Christian fiction has to have a conversion scene.
And all the women have to be Amish for some odd reason. Sorry, go ahead. I've got a joke in there about my Amish Christian fiction, so I won't take it.
But like sci-fi fantasy, you're free from that because there's other genre tropes that you're hitting that tend to be less restrictive, so you can present this sort of thing without being awkward and boring.
Yeah, not everything needs the atheist who doesn't curse to either die or come to saving faith in Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. Not that we wouldn't want that, but that's not how all stories work. The touchstone again is reality. Like you have to describe an alien that is different, or you set that up for later. You're like, oh, we were the aliens all along type deal. So there's got to be a glimmer of relationship. You wouldn't be able to write it apart from the human experience, which is ultimately God's story of a fallen world. And, you know, there's violence and sex in the world. There's people that might not agree with us. There are people that hear the gospel message and might choose to further go on the path of destruction. And if everyone comes to the gospel message every single time and you're just reading and then everyone lived happily ever after, it's that Twilight Zone episode that I think I've referenced a number of times where the guy is always winning the car games and he's always getting everything he wants. And he realizes that he's just going to live a life of boringness in heaven. And he goes to the man and goes, you know, I need some variety here in heaven. You know, I thought this was paradise. And he's like, oh, who said this was heaven? And you're like, oh, this mind blown.